Welcome to another edition of the Press Box Podcast. Hi, I'm your co-host, Ralph Miranda. My other co-host, Joseph Miranda, will be joining us in just a minute. And this is episode number 26, if you're logging it at home. And we're excited to bring you another episode. We hope to bring you them more regularly now, between now and spring training in February. So we're excited about that. There's so much to talk about in the world of sports right now. I mean, as I've said many times, we're in the honey hole of sports right now. We're going to talk a little Major League Baseball today, specifically playoff variety, talk a little bit about the teams that are in the playoffs, a little bit about baseball in general, about playoff baseball. That'll be an exciting topic. We're going to talk a little bit about college football. We're about at the midway pole of college football. Most teams have played at least six ball games. Some have played seven, but most have played at least six. So we're about halfway through the college football season, and within about roughly 2 to 3 weeks here, we'll be getting our first college football playoff rankings. So we'll have a better idea of where teams are stacked when it comes to that. We're going to talk a little bit about Tennessee football, a little bit about their prospects going forward here with their new coach. And we're going to finish with a little talk about golf. We've just had the official end of the golf season, but as my co-host Joseph says, the golf season ended for him at Belle Reve Country Club at the end of the PGA in August. But anyway, we're going to talk a little Ryder Cup, a little Tour Championship, a little Tiger Woods, and a little golf in general. So we've got an exciting show planned for you today, and we're going to follow it up with another one pretty soon right after it to talk a little bit about NFL football as well. So remember, follow our sponsor, Bonus Room Art. Go to www.bonusroomart.com. Lots of great prints, lots of great information on prints. We also want to tune you into YouTube. We want you to go to YouTube. Our producer has started a new series called Mascots and Monikers on YouTube. You can search that on YouTube under Mascots and Monikers. Great videos. How did teams get their name? How did they get their mascot? Very well done production by our producer, something that's going to be continuing from him as well. Remember to tweet us at PressBoxPod. That's at PressBoxPod. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher as well. So exciting one for you today. We're looking forward to it, and we'll be right back with more on the PressBox Podcast.
Here right now, it's October, as we alluded to in the intro, which means, well, it means a lot of things, but it means postseason baseball is here.
Yes, it does. Postseason baseball. I mean, we went 162 games.
163 in some cases.
That's exactly right. 163 in some cases. The season started in the snow in late March, and there, here we are in October in the middle of football season, but we've got postseason baseball, which is always more exciting, always very exciting.
Yeah, so... now, as we're talking right now, the Rockies have already been eliminated by the Brewers, and the Brewers were a little bit of a surprise team, I thought. Throughout the season, they were in it the whole time, and they ended up winning the Central in the extra game. But I kind of felt the Cubs would win the division just because I hadn't seen much out of the Brewers really in the last 8 to 10 years. When Sabathia was there, that's the last time they got to the playoffs.
That's
I think. But if you look at that lineup, it's a pretty good lineup. And up and down because they traded for Moustakas during the season, and then Yelich might win the MVP in the National League. So I don't think that's a fluke. They swept the Rockies, and I think they're going to be heard from in the championship series.
Yeah, I think they will be too. I'd like to step back one step and talk a little bit about the wild card. You know, this is something that was instituted, I don't know what, about 4 years ago roughly, the two wild card teams. And I think, you know, as much as I didn't like it when they first started it, I like it now because – as you know, when they first went to a wild card, there was one wild card team, and that wild card team ended up playing a division series against the team with the best record.
Yeah.
So there was no incentive to win your division, right? Now there is incentive because you look at the Cubs. The Cubs were, you could argue, were the best team in the National League for most of the second half of the season. They found themselves, they lost the one game playoff to Milwaukee, and then they lost the wild card game to the Rockies, and in a matter of 18 innings, they were home.
Yeah.
You know, so there's so much pressure now in that wild card game because it's like Game 7 of the World Series, you know, and I think that's exciting, and I think it adds to the flavor of postseason baseball, and it also puts more teams, gives other teams a chance, yeah, you know, to advance, because without it, the Cubs, if the Cubs would have been in the wild card situation, you know, they would have ended up going to, they would have ended up going to Milwaukee, I guess, for a series rather than a one game playoff.
Who had the best record?
I think Milwaukee ended up with the best record. Yeah. So I just wanted to allude to that a little bit. And but to go to your original point, I think Milwaukee, you know, they're sitting now. They've won the series. They're sitting there with some rest. The Dodgers could not close it out last night. So Milwaukee get a chance to rest, set up their pitching, and I think they got a great chance to get to the World Series.
Yeah. And I agree with your wild card point too. Especially if you look at like the AL East this year, you know, the Yankees won close to 100 games, whereas if it was the old way, the A's obviously wouldn't have been in at all, and the right. Yankees would have been sitting there August 1st thinking, well, it didn't really matter if we win the division. We're going to play the Red Sox anyway.
Right.
But now, yeah, they didn't want to go in the one-game playoff because, it just puts the importance of winning your division, which is how it should be.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, you definitely don't want a one-game playoff because that's a crapshoot. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. So you were talking a little bit the other day, and it's playing itself out now, but before the playoffs started, you thought the Astros might just get back to the World Series.
I did.
Tell me your thoughts about that. Is they're about to win the series here up 10-2 against the Indians.
Yeah, well, I mean, I looked at it, as the playoffs started, I looked at the teams that were in there, and you got the Red Sox. The Red Sox won 108 ball games, which I think was their best performance ever in their history, okay? The Indians won, I think, 94, 95 ball games. The Astros won, I believe, 102 ball games, maybe, if I'm not mistaken. And then the Yankees won 100 games in the wild card. So you've got four teams in there with three of them over 100 wins, one of them close to 100 wins. But when I look at the Astros, and I know the Red Sox are arguably the best team in the American League right now, if you look at record, look at what they've done this year. But when I look at the Astros, I look at a team that, one, they've already won it, right? So they know what it takes. Two, they've got great hitters, not only power hitters, but they got guys that can hit for average, that can move runners over, get guys in from scoring position. And they've got pitching, arguably the best pitching right now in the American League when you look at their staff up top to bottom, and they improved their bullpen from last year. So I think it's going to be hard to beat the Astros in the American League. I just think it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. What you alluded to, which I think is the biggest thing, is just the experience from them knowing that they've been there and they won it last year. You know, we saw guys like today, Springer hit two home runs. He played well this season, but he's really turned it on in the playoffs, kind of carrying over from his performance in the last playoffs. That's definitely a huge factor. Pitching you brought up, which I agree with, and we were talking a little bit earlier about pitching, and you know, I still like the Yankees' rotation in the playoffs, assuming things are clicking at all cylinders. Because I mean, you've got Severino won 19 games, Tanaka, Happ, and then if you need a fourth guy, you've got Sabathia, who's a former Cy Young winner, longtime veteran. Which I think maybe it looks better on paper than it actually is, but if those guys do what they're supposed to do, I'd put their rotation up against almost anybody's.
Well, I know you said that, and I'm a Yankee fan, so I should feel that way. But but there's something about the Yankee rotation that makes me uneasy. Okay, I mean, now you know, going into Game 1 of the series with the Red Sox, Happ had a 1.5 something ERA against the Red Sox in the last 2 years. All right, he had a bad outing. That's going to happen, okay? The Red Sox were ready for him. They hit him. It's going to happen. But he's in line to pitch Game 5 if they get to Game 5, okay? Yeah. So you wonder, is he going to be able to come out and be dominant like he has been, or is he going to have another bad outing? You know, tonight you've got Severino going. For all intents and purposes, you would expect Severino to give you a quality start, but you just never know with the guy. I mean, he even in the wild card game, he came out like wildfire, didn't give up a hit. He walked five guys. You know, so if you're a starting pitcher, there's something about the Yankee starters that even though they're quality and they're good starters, I don't trust them in pressure situations. And whereas the Astros guys, I mean, you know, you look at Garrett Cole and you look at Verlander, you look at all their starters, those guys are consistent. You know, I mean, they don't walk a lot of batters, and that's the key. You can't give guys free passes, and Severino seems to do it regularly. And yeah. Tanaka's and real quick before you jump in, Tanaka's Achilles heel is the home run. He's always giving up two or three home runs.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right about that. I think Severino showed the improvement from last postseason in the wildcard game, obviously. And he did walk those guys, or five guys, you said. But much improved over last year's wildcard game.
No question.
So that was goes back to the experience we talked about, you know, with that helps the Astros, is helping the Yankees in that way now. Also, I think what helped the Yankees in game two is, well, if you're the Red Sox, you can't throw David Price again against the Yankees.
No, you can't. No.
The Yankees killed David Price. So that helped him. Sanchez woke up a little bit. Or woke up a lot with two home runs in game two. Tonight's game is going to be a big game, obviously, because it's game three, but getting it back to Yankee Stadium, I think the Yankees have the advantage right now.
I agree with you. I think they do have the advantage right now, but they've got to win tonight. You can't give the Red Sox a chance to get back to Fenway. But let me say something else. My problem with the Yankees, you know, I'm a football guy, right? And I believe you build championship teams with defense. Look at the Yankees. They, errors constantly. I mean, Andujar is going to probably be the rookie of the year at third base. The guy can't throw the ball to first base, okay? They got a first baseman who can't scoop the ball up. Yeah. I mean, they make more errors than any 100-win team I've ever seen. So what do the Yankees do? They say, we're going to club you to death, right? We're going to hit home runs. We're going to score 9 runs. And that's nice, okay? But when you get into a championship situation, like in football, when you get in the playoffs, you've got to have defense. And part of defense is pitching. And you can't give guys free passes. And that's my only problem with the Yankees. They might beat the Red Sox. I don't think they can beat the Astros that way.
Well, didn't one of the other games they put somebody in the third late in the game for defense?
They did. I forget the guy's name now. They did for defensive purposes.
Yeah. They see that too, obviously. But
sure they do.
And like you said, Andujar, I think, is the rookie of the year.
Without a doubt. Torres would have been had he not gotten hurt and kind of cooled off a little bit.
Yeah. Speaking of rookies and young players, the Braves, I think they're a year early.
They are.
A year too early. Like, going into the season, I think the Nationals were expected to win the division, and maybe with the Mets even competing. And then how it played out, the Phillies got hot a little bit. They were kind of in the mix, and the Braves ended up winning it. Largely on the backs of a lot of young guys, you know,
right.
Acuna. They brought up a number of different pitchers, Alves, a lot of these
Swanson.
Guys. Swanson, yeah. But they're not out of the playoffs yet. I just don't think right now they have the experience and it's kind of the wherewithal to advance. But you know, they've got a bright future for sure.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, and I agree with you 100% that I think they're a year away from being a championship team. But, you know, the old saying, they might just be young enough not to understand the magnitude of the situation. You know, so it's very – they did win last night. It's possible that they could shock the world. The only thing is that they're going to have to face Kershaw again.
Yeah.
Well, more than likely. Yeah. You know, I mean, I would think that if you had to pitch Kershaw – if you went to a game five, you'd probably – want to pitch Kershaw
on Wednesday, Game Five. So he would be what, on 3 days rest?
Yeah, probably 3 days rest. You may not want to do that, but anyway, to go back to your point, I agree with you. I think next year is the Braves' year, and I think the reason I say that is the Nationals are going to be in transition next year. I mean, they've already traded away a couple guys.
Yeah.
I think Harper's not going to re-sign with them. I don't see the Nationals being a contender next year. I don't think the Mets look like they've got anything to contend.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Braves. And the Phillies might give him a run next year. You never know.
Yeah. You mentioned Harper there. I know he's out of the playoffs now, but where do you think he signs next year?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that earlier, and you mentioned that the Cubs look like they might be the team.
Well, that's kind of if you look at some of the actual like odds on favorites to land him, it's the Cubs. But I don't know. I wouldn't count the Yankees out because I think he might want to go there, but it'd be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, it would be. I think, you know, we talked a little bit about that. Where would the Yankees put him? And we talked about, you know, the Yankees could put him in center field and they could move Hicks to left field. McCutchen's done a nice job for the Yankees this year since they traded for him, but he's not, you know, he's kind of at the tail end of his career. Gardner's at the tail end of his career. So that would be a nice outfield. And then, like you said, you could mix Judge, Harper, Hicks, and Stanton as your DH from time to time and rotate them in and out of the outfield.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he would make a lot of sense. And with the short right field porch, it's perfect for Harper.
Yeah.
But, again, I think, you know, All right, so you're going to hit another 25, 30 home runs. You still got to shut the other. You still got to shut the other guys down. You know what I mean?
I saw one stat. They set the record for most players with 20 home runs or more this year.
Yes, they did.
They had like 8 or 9 guys that did that.
And they set the record for most team home runs, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
So they had 267 home runs.
So I mean, but I have to find the list of free agents. But what pitchers are out there this offseason that they could go sign? Or we talked about the guy they have in their system that played in the Futures game, Sheffield,
right?
Who came up in September and pitched out of the bullpen a little bit. He could be on the horizon as a starter in the upcoming years.
Yeah, I don't see the Yankees. I really don't see the Yankees going after any free agent pitchers in the offseason. And the reason I say that is, you know, they've got Happ that they signed. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the guys we just talked about. Right. I think Sonny Gray's contract is up, so I doubt they're going to re-sign him. And as we talked about, I think Sonny Gray's a really good pitcher, but some guys can pitch in the pressure of New York, and I don't think he can. So right. I think if he goes somewhere else, he'll get back on track.
Yeah.
You know, what the mistake the Yankees made, I think, to me, and I don't even know if they could have signed him, but last year they should have gotten Verlander. I mean, if they would have gotten Verlander last year, they would have won the American League Championship and probably would have won the World Series and would be the odds-on favorite this year. They let the Astros one-up them on that guy, and that's what you need. I mean, you need a guy of that. If you're going to go after a free agent pitcher or trade for one, you got to go all in. You know, you got to get the big-name guy.
Yeah. And Astros took a little bit of a chance because, you know, Verlander, he's a former MVP, but
true.
He wasn't pitching lights out for the Tigers that last year down the stretch like he is now.
Right.
So they got him after the non-waiver trade deadline. Took a little bit of a chance, and he just kind of found his second win there last year in the playoffs, and he took it into this year and had a great year.
Yeah,
so,
he did.
You know, sometimes you trade for pitchers that aren't a sure thing, but that's part of it. You take a little bit of a chance and on a guy that you think has something left and it pays off for you, like Verlander.
Yeah.
So they're seeing that right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But you know as well as I do, we talked about this as well, that, you know, when it comes down to the playoffs, it's all about pitching. I mean, right. it's that's really what it's all about. And if you can get a guy that gives you six innings, seven innings maybe of quality baseball,
right.
you know, gives up a run or two, you got a chance to win just about every game you're in. Because more than likely, you know, you're going to face, in a seven-game series, you're probably going to face their ace at least twice, maybe three times,
right.
and probably twice in a five-game series. So, you know, if you can't hit him, you might as well, you can forget it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to the Yankees last year against the Astros. I mean, they had to face Verlander in game seven, and they just couldn't hit him.
Yeah. Speaking of pitching, what was your take on the A's strategy to go with basically a bullpen game in the wild card round, which... You know, we've seen some teams do this now. The Rays experimented, you know, with what they call the opener.
Right.
Have a guy come out and pitch the first and kind of get through the meat of the lineup.
Right.
And then not to be seen again. But maybe it works if you're a team like the A's during the season. You don't have, you know, a lot of quality starters that you can throw out there one after another. But I think in a playoff game like that, it's just too weird. I don't know. I don't think it works well. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're counting on a lot of guys to be on that night if you're going to pitch 7, 8, 9 guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, you're exactly right. And I think the philosophy there is, you know, I think they did it because they were playing the Yankees. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because the Yankees are known to be a team that likes to be patient at the plate, likes to make the starter go deep in the count, get him out of the game, and get to the bullpen.
Yeah.
So I guess they were thinking, okay, if we can throw a different guy every time through the lineup, the Yankees can't really do that, okay? But it backfired on him because the first guy they threw out there gave up the lead right away.
Right.
Then they brought in the Trevino guy.
Gave him 3 good innings.
Pitched excellent. Yeah. But, again, that's all he had. And then they had to bring, you know, somebody else in. So I don't like it. I mean, I understand it, but I don't like it. I think you have to go with, you know, your ace. And maybe they felt like they didn't have one, you know?
Well, I mean, obviously you don't feel that way if you're not starting him in a do or die game like that.
Right. And didn't I heard something where they said that none of their starting rotation at the start of the season was really in their rotation at the end of the season,
right.
either through injuries right. or something. So that's probably the reason they felt like that was the best way to go about it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's kind of a wacky way to approach a playoff game, but
yeah.
you know, who knows.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question. We talked about October being a big month in all sports, really. NBA starting up here.
Right.
Hockey just started. You hear things all the time about should Major League Baseball jump back to like a 154-game schedule or even lower and kind of alter the timing of the World Series or the playoffs. I like it at 162 like it is now. I don't think they should change anything. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I grew up in an era where they were playing 162 games, yeah. But they used to play a lot of doubleheaders. I mean, they used to start the baseball season in mid-April,
right.
Okay? And they would end it, basically the end of September. But every Sunday there was a doubleheader when I was a kid, all right? Yeah. Of course, the players' union doesn't want doubleheaders, right. and they want more days off between
right.
games,
yeah.
So they've extended the season. So now, and then when you add levels of playoffs, now you got a wild card right. game, it's not going to end till the end of October.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you would be able to do that without taking days off out of it
yeah.
and maybe playing some doubleheaders.
Right.
You see what I mean?
No, I think you're right.
But to answer your question, I think it would benefit baseball to think about doing that because right now, you look at tonight, for example. Tonight we're going to have everybody's going to have a choice between Yankees Red Sox
right.
or Saints Redskins.
Right.
Well, most people probably going to watch the football
yeah.
game, So does that help baseball? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. Now the World Series will be in the same boat come on a Sunday and a Saturday night.
Right.
They'll own
yeah.
the midweek,
right.
So if they could do it differently, I think it would be better.
Like you said, I think the only way is to cut down the games because
right. But
as someone who's gone through a baseball schedule, the off days are nice. Like I'm not opposed to them adding more off days because that's always good. But when spring training, you think, well, okay, they're starting these games like mid to late February. It seems really early.
Right.
Really early. And,
right.
and the season starts now like the last week of March, and it just. And I get it. That's what they have to do to build in some of those off days and play 162 games. But I guess the answer is to knock some games off. But
that's the only way
again,
you can do it.
They're probably not going to go for that either because of the money and all.
If you went to 154 games, you could basically knock off a week of the season, right?
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more than a week.
Yeah.
So really, if you did that, your World Series would end probably around the second week of October, which...
Yeah.
Might be a better way to go about it. I don't know. But then again, another thing you got to remember, too, is, 40 years ago or 50 years ago, college football wasn't what it is today.
Right. Yeah.
Pro football
right.
definitely wasn't
right.
what it is today.
Right.
So baseball ruled the roost.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of competition out
yeah.
there. And those sports have gotten more popular.
Yeah.
I think baseball still has its share of fans, and I think they still draw pretty well on TV ratings. But I think they lose when they're up against the
yeah.
NFL.
Yeah.
So
it's last before we move on here. Who's your World Series pick right now? Sit here. The matchup, not the winner.
The matchup.
You can give the winner if you
All
want.
Right. Right now, if I had to pick the World Series matchup, I'm going to say it's going to be. I'm going to say rematch of the Astros and the Dodgers.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say. I'm gonna say Dodgers. I want to say Dodgers Yankees. That's what I'd like to say, but the risk of being like non-exciting. I'm gonna say Dodgers Astros again.
Yeah,
it just kind of feels like those are the teams right now.
Yeah, it feels like that's what we're headed
yeah,
for.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. So that. Well, we'll obviously follow up on that. Baseball is going to be a big topic here for the next few weeks. We'll have a champion crown here and. A little over 3 weeks.
About 2 weeks. No,
yeah.
you're right. About 2 weeks will be a champion.
So we'll definitely hit on that again. Do you want to talk a little college football here?
Yeah, let's talk a little college football. We got about midway through the season right now.
Right.
So
the playoff rankings come out week 8, is that right?
I believe so. So, yeah, they'll come out at the end of week 8.
Okay,
I believe that's right.
Okay.
But right now, your top five are Alabama, Georgia, Clemson. Who's number four?
I'll tell you.
I should know that.
So we got Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson.
That's it. I forgot about
Notre Dame at five.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Georgia, Alabama. I mean, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame. Right.
Ohio State and Clemson both receiving a first place vote.
Yes, they are. Well, Ohio State, I mean, they're the most overrated football team in college football, I think. But that's just beside the point. But yeah, I think it's been an exciting season so far. And I think there's still a lot of football to be played. And if you look at those top five teams, you know, Alabama's got to play LSU, Auburn, and probably Georgia in the SEC championship game, assuming Georgia doesn't stub their toe. Georgia's probably got the toughest schedule of any of them. They got to play LSU, Auburn, and Florida to get through to win the East, and then they're going to have to play Alabama.
They got Kentucky too.
Well, it's, I don't know.
Never know.
But what I'm trying to say is Alabama or Georgia, one of those is probably going to lose, and probably Georgia will lose. Clemson probably doesn't have much left, but they have to play the ACC championship game, maybe against Virginia Tech.
Right.
And, you know, Virginia Tech could give them a fight. Ohio State doesn't have much left except Michigan in the Big Ten championship, which probably won't be much of a challenge for them. And then really the wild card in this whole thing is Notre Dame because, you know, up until – when they started this college football playoff in 2014, you know, obviously with only four teams going and five teams, five major conferences, there's always going to be one conference left out. Well, this year there's a possibility of two conferences being left out because if Notre Dame goes undefeated, which right now there's a pretty good chance they could do that, then you're going to have two teams that are going to be left, two conferences that are probably going to be left out of this thing. And that's going to be interesting to see how everybody reacts to that.
Yeah. Specifically about Notre Dame, though, and we watched the game Saturday night at Virginia Tech, and we watched them all season. We watched them years past. And you've said this, but what do you think is different about them this year where you can feel better about them competing in the playoffs and being for real as opposed to years past where, you know, they got to the championship game but couldn't hold their own against Alabama and things like that?
Right. Two things I see. The first thing, and I think I said this when we were watching the game Saturday night, I wanted them to win, obviously, but I wasn't so concerned about that as I was how were they going to handle this environment. Because, you know, they went to Clemson a couple years ago and got beat pretty handily.
Right.
They went to Miami last year, were down 27-0 at halftime, were blown out of the stadium, and they were ranked third. So how are they going to handle it? Well, they handled it really well. They came out that first drive, and they pushed the ball in the end zone. They played exceptional football, did not commit a lot of penalties, did not make a lot of mistakes, pretty much controlled the game. There was a time early in the game when it was close, but they pretty much controlled that game. That's number one, is they seem to be able to handle the moment better than they have in the last 4 or 5 years. All right. Second thing is they have a quarterback. All right. Brian Kelly, I'm not a big fan of Brian Kelly as a coach, but I got to give the guy all the props in the world. He made a real tough decision. Yeah. They were 3-0, they were ranked in the top 10, and he sat his quarterback and he went to Ian Book, and that guy has been the difference. I mean, since he's been the starter, they've scored 52, 38, 45.
All right.
They're balanced. They throw it and run it equally well. He reminds me a little bit of Joe Montana in college. I mean, I know that's a little bit of blasphemy, but a little bit of Joe
former
Montana.
Former teammate, we should add.
Yes, former teammate, because that's what Montana was able to do. He could throw it downfield, he could throw it on the run, but he could also run it a little bit if he needed to, and that's what this guy does. And he doesn't seem to be rattled at all. So I think Notre Dame is a legitimate contender this year to get to the championship game because of those two things. And their defense. I mean, they have a stellar defense. They have the ability this year to put pressure on the quarterback with their front four. And when you can do that, you can beat a lot of football teams.
Yeah, I think it's, if anything, well, you just talked about the points. I mean, at Wake Forest and at Virginia Tech, over 40 points both games, over 50 in one game.
Right.
Where, as you go back to 2012, I think they had a really good defense. But you remember some of these games, they were haggling out against Pitt down the stretch.
I do.
And pulling out one-point games here and there.
Goal line stand against Stanford to beat them 20-19 or whatever it was. Yeah,
so, yeah, I think that... Yeah, you basically said it. That's the difference this year. And so real quick, what team worries you most in the schedule left for them, if you had to pick one? Because sitting here looking at it right now, they don't have a ranked team left in the schedule.
Yeah, the team that worries me the most is the one sitting at the very end.
Yeah, USC. Right?
Yeah, and the reason I say that is because if Notre Dame goes into the Coliseum undefeated and probably ranked by that time they could be ranked
top four. Right?
They could be in the top four in the playoff ranking, right? Probably three. All right. Southern Cal more than likely is not going to have a whole lot to play for. They've already got two losses, right? They're going to be playing for their they might be playing for their conference championship, but for practical purposes, not much to play for. You know, that's going to be the team that worries me the most because it's a rivalry game. They're not going to be intimidated by Notre Dame. Notre Dame's not going to be intimidated by them. Florida State would worry me if they had to go down there, but they play them at home, all right? And if you look at the – I mean, they got Pitt at home, then they got a bye, then they got Navy, and then they got Florida State, or maybe Northwestern before that at Northwestern. Those games don't really concern me. You know, Syracuse and Yankee Stadium shouldn't be a big deal. but the Southern Cal game is the one – and similar to 2012, remember? They went down there undefeated. They had to win that game to get to the national championship game. And they were able to do it. But I think they can do it. But that, to answer your question, that would be the one that would worry me the most right now.
So if we take it away from the playoffs for a second, let's talk a little bit about Tennessee. I mean, we talked in the early days of the Press Box podcast. It was right around the time that they hired the new coach, Jeremy Pruitt. And we talked a little bit about that and to a few different people, too, that have played there and that have covered Tennessee. What are you seeing from him the first half of the season? I mean, obviously, not great things out of the team, but is it a thing where you think that, okay, these are still Butch Jones' players, or are you putting any blame at all right now on this
coach? No, I'm not putting any blame on this coach at all. I've told many of my friends who are Tennessee fans that I play golf with that are starting to get a little antsy and start, you know, I mean, you got to give the guy time. Yeah. I mean, first of all, he inherited a depleted lineup, okay? Yeah. Or a depleted roster, I should say. You know, his offensive line is really poor right now. He's got a freshman defensive secondary. You know, these guys have to learn how to play it his way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get addition by subtraction. He's going to have to weed out some of these guys that are not committed, they're not given 100%, and build the team back up with recruiting. He's only had one recruiting class, all right? So I think, and if you look at the Georgia game, that game really was a lot closer than the score. They played Georgia pretty tough. And I think we'll see here over the next 3 weeks when they play Auburn, Alabama, some of these teams, South Carolina, Kentucky, how do they perform in those games? And if they give them a fight and they hang in there, I think that's what you want from that team, okay? I'll give you an example. You know, back when Notre Dame hired Lou Holtz in 1986, you know, he was inheriting a roster from Jerry Faust that was, you know, a lot of great athletes, but they hadn't been coached very well. First year, Holtz went 5-6, but he played everybody tough. And then the next year, they were 8-2. And then the following year, they won the national championship. So that's what's got to happen, is it takes time to build your system. I think this guy's a really good coach. He knows what it takes. He was the Alabama defensive coordinator. I think he's going to do all right. I think he's got to get some players in there, and he's got to get them all bought into his system. But as much as my Tennessee friends don't like to hear me say this, it's going to get worse before it gets better, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'm not someone who follows the college recruiting like some people do and follows the recruiting rankings or recruiting classes like this and that. But, I mean, it definitely obviously is important. I mean, if you don't have the players, you can't compete with the likes of Alabama and Georgia and the guys that are getting the players.
Right.
But again, I mean, Tennessee has had some players, maybe not a whole slew of them like some of these other teams, but they just have to, A, put them in the right positions, which this guy, I think, can be able to do.
Right.
Going forward, which is big key.
Well, you got to build, you know, I mean, he's got to build the team. He's trying to build the team, I think, the way Alabama did it. I mean, you got to build your offensive line. You got to build your defensive line. You got to be able to run the football, take the pressure off your quarterback. I mean, he got killed, that poor quarterback, in the Florida game.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to do that. And when you have a freshman defensive secondary, it takes a while for them to mature as well. So, yeah, I think recruiting next year will be critical. And I think within 2 years, I think Tennessee ought to be back competing again. But then again, here's another thing people have to remember. They play – you look at the Southeastern Conference. There's 14 teams in the Southeastern Conference, right? Name me more than two teams that are not any good in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, that are pitiful, right? I can't. I mean – Vanderbilt's not the best, but they're pretty tough. Kentucky's good this year. Yeah. South Carolina can beat you on any given Saturday. Okay. Arkansas, well, who knows? You know, my point is Ole Miss is probably the worst right now. My point is that they play in a tough conference. So it's hard to go undefeated. It's hard to even win 9 games, you know, when you play in a conference like that. So it's going to take time to get to that level. Not everybody gets to the level of an Alabama or a Georgia. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Arkansas is 1-5 overall right now.
You're right.
Mississippi State's, well, they're 0-2 in the, Ole Miss is 0-2 in the conference, but 4-2 overall.
Yeah.
So yeah, some, like you said, some good teams there.
Yeah, Mississippi State just beat Auburn.
Right.
Right. Texas A&M just beat Kentucky.
Right.
So.
Yeah,
top to bottom, yeah. Anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
So did Arkansas score like 31 points in Alabama.
They did. That's right. That's our producer Nathan. And thank you for bringing that out to us. And we kid around and say that I'm sure Nick Saban is that's his locker room fodder this week from his team. You can't give up 31 points.
Yeah. So what else do we want to talk about here before we for off?
Well, I think, you know, I think if you look at college football, I mean, I think it's getting exciting, and I think, you know, to me there's a bias. There's always been a bias towards Ohio State, and I think right now there is, because to me Ohio State has one pretty big win, you know? I mean, they went to Penn State, right, and they beat Penn State, which was a nice win for them. But are they really the third best team in the country? I don't know, you know. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Like you said, I don't see them getting tested in their conference championship game.
No.
I think that they're going to beat Michigan, if not handily. You know, it's not going to come down to the wire. I think they're going to comfortably beat Michigan.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
here's a question about it. Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Michigan, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if Michigan loses to Ohio State, I mean, Harbaugh, they paid him a lot of money.
My thought is that, hey, he's a little overrated. Okay.
Yes.
Whether that was he got too much hype because he was coming back to the school where he played in Michigan,
right,
and expected a little too much of him, that could be it. You know, he's obviously, I think, in the top 3 highest paid coaches, so
right,
that's going to cause some overratedness in people's eyes. I think he's an NFL coach.
Yes,
really.
I agree.
I mean, he played QB in the NFL for a number of years.
Right.
You saw what he did with the 49ers, where, you know, he made Colin Kaepernick looked like a Super Bowl quarterback.
He did.
We found out he really isn't. But he got the guy lighted him, turned the 49ers around completely, and then, you know, had kind of wore out his welcome with the front office there.
Right.
But I don't know how it's going to turn out in Michigan ultimately. Ultimately, I think he's going to fall short of expectations. I don't think he's going to take him to the championship. I don't think he's going to get to the playoffs even, really. So I think that it's, you know, a matter of time whether he decides to leave or they basically fire him. But I think he goes back to the NFL ultimately and lands somewhere there and you know, tries to turn a team around.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point there, because you look at recruiting. Is he a really good recruiter? Maybe not. In other words, if you're, I mean, maybe our producer Nathan can give us some insight on this, because, you know, he was recently in the recruiting a few years back. But if a Jim Harbaugh calls you, right, and wants to come, you're going to probably want him to come because he's Jim Harbaugh, right? He played quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. But when he sits down and talks to you, you may think, I'm not really impressed with this guy. You see what I mean? But when a Brian Kelly, let's just use him for example, calls you, all right, it's Brian Kelly, it's Notre Dame. But he may be a great recruiter. He may come in there and make you feel like you're the best guy in the world. So my point in saying all that is that we don't know really what kind of a recruiter he is. He may not be that good of a recruiter.
And how many high school players these days are that impressed with Harbaugh's NFL career? Do they even know he played in the NFL?
That's another good point.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So really, a high school guy is going to be impressed today with how that coach makes him feel when he comes to visit him. You know, I mean, does he make him feel like he's the most important guy that's coming into that program? Yeah. You know?
I think, again, we're sitting here speaking for high school kids, I guess, but I think that a lot of them probably think they want to know what they're getting. Like, if Saban comes in, you know what you're getting there.
You know what you're getting. That's right.
If Dabo Swinney from Clemson,
right,
they've made playoff runs the last 4 or 5 years. You know what you're getting there.
Right.
You're going to compete every year. Harbaugh is kind of like, yeah, I could go to Michigan. Are we going to be that good? Like, are things going to really work out in my favor? Is he going to take another job? Is he going to? There's a lot of question marks, I feel like,
right,
at the program.
No, so you're exactly right. Yeah. And it's harder to recruit these days because, you know, when I was in college, 100 years ago, you know, the reason Notre Dame and Oklahoma, Notre Dame could always say, hey, you can be on TV every week, right? I mean, you go to a Clemson 50 years ago, you weren't going to be on TV, right? Today, every school is on TV, so you can't really use that anymore. It's got to be, what can you do for me? You know, they want to know, when am I going to play? What am I going to start? You know, so it's a different ball game, and really, that's the lifeblood of two points. You got to be a great recruiter. But you got to be like Nick Saban. You got to be able to develop those players. Yeah. You can recruit all you want, and I think that was Butch Jones's failing at Tennessee. He brought in a lot of good players, but he couldn't develop them, okay? And they never really got any better. Right. And some of them left, and that was the problem. You've got to be able to develop those players and make them better because you grow a lot from the time you're 18 to the time you're 22, you have to get better.
Look at Kamara, I mean, they didn't exactly use him great. He fell to the fourth round because people didn't really know how good he was. Now he's arguably one of the best running backs in the NFL.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm sure we'll talk more about it as we get closer to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know.
So lastly here, let's hit golf a little bit.
Yes.
the golf season effectively ended for me after the PGA Championship.
Yeah, I know it did,
but it more officially ended with the playing the Tour Championship and then the Ryder Cup right after. So, I know a lot of Ryder Cup. There's a lot of mixed feelings, I guess. If you're a hardcore golf fan, you're going to follow it, and some people get really into the Ryder Cup.
They do, yeah.
And some people that even follow the tour don't really pay as much attention to the Ryder Cup. For me personally, it's kind of like a fun little sideshow. Like I don't put much stock into it because guys are kind of put in weird positions. You got Tiger playing I don't know the exact events he played this year, but he could be playing alternate shot with the guy.
And right.
It's not a true representation of how a player is golfing at that time.
Correct.
More of a team event. But
correct.
What are your thoughts on the Ryder Cup and, you know,
how
it played out?
Yeah, you know, the United States really got embarrassed. They had won the Cup 2 years ago, and then this year they started out three points to one after the morning round on Friday, and then they fell apart.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you said, I don't understand it all, like who you pair this guy with and, you know, is he better at four ball? Is he better at alternate shot? You know, all this crap. And you're playing match play, which is a lot different too, you know, because now, you know, it alters the way you play certain holes, right? I mean, if you're up by three holes, you're going to be more conservative as opposed to whether you're up by three strokes,
right?
So you're right. It's not a true – to me, it's not a – to me, to answer your question, all this, you know negative press that the United States is getting, especially Tiger Woods and Mickelson, because they've lost in their Ryder Cup career. I think they both lost the most matches of anybody. Right. It's really not a true indicator, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also feel like European fans and players care more about it than the American.
They do.
I think like some of those guys like Ian Poulter and these guys, they kind of almost live for the Ryder Cup, whereas
exactly
the American guys, you know, they were trying to win the Tour Championship. They're trying to play good golf, and they're going to go to the Ryder Cup and play, but it doesn't really mean as much. You know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. I think it's nice. It's a nice event. They get to wear nice little uniforms, and you know, next year, 2 years, it'll be in the United States.
Right,
so that's great. But yeah, I think the FedEx Cup, you know, and the tour is the thing that really matters. And you know, Tiger Woods got his 80th professional win.
Have we talked about that? I don't think
we have not talked about that.
80 professional wins is, forget the majors. I mean, just look at that. I mean, if you're a golfer and you win three times on tour in your career, that's like a big achievement.
That's a big achievement,
and
yes.
What Mickelson's won, 17, 20?
No, Mickelson's won over 40 times.
Okay, over 40 times. That's a heck of a lot. Tiger's 80.
Yeah, he's only half to where Tiger's
80. Done. 80 wins on tour. That's amazing.
And he's only got to win, three more? I think they said Snead had 82 wins.
Three more to break it.
To break it, which he'll probably do.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, heck, he almost won the FedEx Cup. I mean, if Justin Rose would have he hit his second shot on 18 on Sunday at the Tour Championship, which was a par 5, and it hit just over a bunker. If it would have rolled backwards in the bunker, he would have had a birdie putt of some significant length, which he had to have. As it turned out, he was able to have a very short tap in for birdie, and that won him the FedEx Cup. But Tiger finished second in the FedEx Cup. I mean, that's pretty amazing considering where he was at the start of the season.
Yeah.
And I think if you held Tiger down and put a gun to his head and said, you know, he would have said, you know, I really didn't care about the Ryder Cup. I went because it was, you know.
Right.
but you know, he was worn out. The guy had played like, I think, 7 out of 8 weeks.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Most of those guys are worn out.
Yeah, and but that's he's worn out. That was a good thing though, because his back held up through all that.
It did.
And the Tour Championship was at the end of that, and he still was able to win the tournament. So
that's right.
I think that bodes well going forward. I'm not saying he should still keep next year a relatively light event schedule. Around the majors and things like that, but to show that his body can hold up through that ringer is good too.
It was, and I, you know, again, I really don't like I'm very anti-media, okay, because I think they're always looking to throw digs and devalue what somebody who's great tries to do. They do that with Notre Dame all the time, okay, and that's a whole other story. But one of the things that they were saying after the Tour Championship, the Brandel Chamblee and all these guys, which Brandel Chamblee, who is he, first of all, okay? He shouldn't even be talking about Tiger Woods, okay? But like, well, he won a tournament with only 30 golfers in it.
The 30 best golfers in the world.
Exactly. Yeah. But nobody said that about Xander Schauffele, the rookie who won it last year. Right. Everybody's like, oh, a rookie, he won the Tour Championship. He only beat 30 golfers or 29 golfers. I don't care if you beat 30 or 15 or 20, but you're right. They were the 30 best in the world, right? And he won the thing. Yeah. I mean, from start to finish. So that's the thing. They always are looking for things to put the chink in the armor of Tiger Woods. You know, well, he's not really quite there yet. He really hasn't done this. That's why I really hope the guy comes out next year and wins a major.
Yeah.
Because then I want to see what they say then. Right.
That's the last piece of the puzzle. I mean, as fun as it was to watch the Tour Championship and the fact that he won it, it still wasn't a major. So. Ultimately, he's got to track down Nicholas. He's got to win the 18 majors, which I still think he can do. And we've talked about it before. But we've got Masters, obviously. It's always it goes.
Pebble Beach,
right? He won it there in 2000. He almost won
2010.
He shot that 66 on Saturday and had the tournament and just couldn't close it on Sunday. But it's going to be fun to watch. Honestly, I'm not totally sure the other two are next year.
I'm not either right now. I mean, I know I do. I know the British Open is in Ireland for the first time ever. It's in Royal Porthrush or something in Ireland. And the PGA, I don't remember exactly where the PGA. The PGA is going to be in March or May this year.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's in May this year. I'm not quite sure where it's at. You could probably find it pretty quickly there.
We'll find it here in a second, yeah.
But yeah, that's been moved up because of the change in the schedule next year. But the greatest thing from that Tour Championship –
It's at Bethpage.
It's at Bethpage. Okay, that's right. But was the fans? Did you see the 18th hole when Tiger Woods? Yeah. I mean, that was unbelievable. I had never seen that before. That was like unbelievable. All those people. I mean, him and McIlroy almost didn't make it out of the crowd. Right. I mean,
it kind of reminds you of like the Open Championship where they're out there on the lawn and everybody's running around, which you don't see as much here. But
no, it really
it was very cool to see.
Well, next year should be an interesting year for Tiger Woods as well. I'm hoping he comes out and starts out strong and gets another major under his belt.
Absolutely. So that'll do it for this episode of the Press Box Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We're going to talk NFL in the next episode here shortly. Now that we're more of a quarter way through the NFL season, so things are starting to take shape a little bit here. We're going to be excited to hopefully bring you a guest here soon in the next one or two episodes of the podcast. And before we sign off, we'll remind you as usual to follow us on Twitter at PressBoxPod. Tweet anything you want at us, topics, guests you'd like to see, anything you want at all. We'd like to interact with you there as well. Anything else you'd like to add here before we get up?
I think that'll do it. Look forward to the next one.
All right, for Ralph, this is Joseph signing off on the Press Box Podcast. See you soon.